requires a lot of interpretation. So 4.18 is saying basically something about action and inaction. Sa yuktaha, let's go from the bottom and try to understand it. The person who is engaged like this, krutsna karma krit. Krutsna means everything. The word krutsna is different from the word Krishna. Krutsna will come several times in the Bhagavad Gita. It comes when Krishna summarizes material and spiritual energies. In 7.6, he says that all material and spiritual, they phenomena, they emanate from me. There also uses the word Krishna. So Krishna means everything. So Krishna karma krit. Such a person can be engaged in all kinds of work, but he is yukta, he is well situated, he is connected. Yuktaha comes from the root yoga, to connect. So yuktaha means he is well connected for achieving transcendence. Sa buddhiman manushyeshu. Such a person is intelligent. So he is intelligent and he is well connected. So Krishna is obviously holding the person whom he is describing over here in high esteem. He is a well-situated person, he is an intelligent person, and he can do various kinds of activities. So in that sense, Krishna is saying, Arjuna, if you are this kind of person, you can even fight and you will not get bound. So what is this kind of person? He is describing two characters. Yaha pashyet. What does he see? Karmanya akarma and akarmani cha karmaya. Karmanya akarma means, literally speaking, one who sees action in inaction. Karmanya akarma and akarmani cha karmaya. So, inaction and action in inaction. So, this, as we know, is a confusing verse. And we have discussed this, if you remember, in our Ishopanishad. Let's go over here. So, does anyone remember what the word karma has four different meanings? I mentioned that. Does anyone remember what are the meanings? No. Literally, the word karma itself can have four different meanings. Sorry, yeah? Correct, you're on the right track. The action, yeah, karma can mean action, karma can mean reaction.
Yes.
So karma means, okay, this is the kind of activity that I'm going to do. Always we are doing karma. Jātu tiṣṭhatya karma krut. You remember in 4.2, 3rd chapter Krishna said, you cannot be situated without doing any activity at all. So karma can mean activity in general. Then among the various kinds of activities that are possible, karma can refer to a specific activity that is pious. So that will refer to karma vikarma, that contrast. So at a broad level, karma can mean any action. So when Krishna says, we always have to do some karma. Karyate ya avasya karma sarva prakriti jairvane. Third chapter, you cannot stay without doing any activity. You always have to act. That is, Krishna is referring to the broad term karma. You have to do some action all the time. Then within the various kinds of action that are possible, there is a specific pious activity, which also is referred to as karma. That means there is karma and vikarma. So within the, so all actions can be called as karma, but pious actions can also be called as karma. That thirdly, karma can also refer to the reaction to our actions. Oh, I am suffering my own karma. So what we mean by that is, I am suffering my karmic reactions. So karma can refer to the reactions to the actions that we have done. And thirdly, nobody can escape karma. And we say, that means what? Nobody can escape the law of karma. So there we can refer to karma as the system of action and reaction. Karma is a flawless, infallible justice. So here we are referring to karma as the whole system of action and reaction. So karma can have these two different meanings, these four different meanings rather. And akarma can have two distinct meanings. Akarma can at one level mean inactivity, literally speaking. Karma, akarma. And another meaning of akarma can be activity that brings no reaction. That means there is action, but because it is not reactive, then it can be activity that brings no reaction. So that means among the four meanings of karma, the first meaning of akarma contrasts with the first meaning of karma. Any activity in general, that means karma, and akarma means no activity in general. And the second meaning of akarma roughly contrasts the third meaning of karma. And it's a reaction to action. No, there is no reaction to this kind of action. Then it is akarma. Then this way, the words karma and akarma can have different meanings in different contexts. And now, let us, with these four meanings in mind, let us try to understand what this verse is saying. If we just look at the Sanskrit and try to read it, or even if we try to read Prabhupada's translations, actually it is both a tongue twister and a brain twister. Now, if you want to say action in action and action in action, it's difficult to pronounce also, first of all. And not only is it difficult to pronounce, it's even more difficult to understand. What does it mean? Action in action, in action in action. So what it means is, Krishna is talking about different meanings of these words. So let's look at it over here. Karmanya akarma yaha pashye. So akarmani cha karma. Let's look at the first part. Karmanya akarma yaha pashye. So karmani means he's doing action. But a wise person sees that actually there is no reaction to that action. So here karma refers to activity and akarma refers to no karmic reaction. So in this verse, so see in external activity no karmic reaction. That means the person is doing activity, but because he is doing it in a detached, dutiful way, so he does not get bound, and that's why he does not get any karmic reactions. So karmanya akarma yaha pashyet. In activity, one sees that there is no karmic bondage, there is no karmic reaction. And the example for that is what Krishna wants Arjuna to do. If you fight with a detached dutifulness, then you will not be bound. So although externally you will be acting, you will not be bound. And this is how Janaka and Vivaswan and all the other great souls in the past have acted. Evam gyatva kutam karma. In 4.15 we discussed. So now that is the first part. Now akarmani cha karma yaha. So here karma refers to, actually here it refers to, okay, I think what I'll do, I'll put the meanings of both over here so that will come clear. Here akarma refers to no external activity, but there is karma, there is karmic bondage, there is karmic reaction. Akarma so akarmani cha karma yaha. There is no external activity happening, but still there is karmic reaction that is coming. And why is that? That is because the person is contemplating on the sense objects. And Krishna was warned about this kind of, Krishna warned Arjuna about this kind of person in the famous verse, mithyacharah samuchyate karmendriyani samyamya yasate manasa smaran indriyarthan mudatma mithyacharah samuchyate. A person is not engaging in sense gratification externally, but he is contemplating on the sense object. Such a person is a mithyachar, he will delude himself. So because he is contemplating on the sense objects, over a period of time he will engage in sense gratification. And even if such a person doesn't engage in sense gratification, especially if the person is renounced order, and even contemplating on sense objects is contaminating for such a person. And that will also lead to some kind of karmic reactions. In Kali Yuga, we are exempted from the karmic reactions for our mental deeds, for our thoughts. But still, they will also eventually transform into words and actions. So we have to be careful. So what is the meaning of this verse? Krishna is telling basically Arjuna, go beyond externals. Don't just see externally whether a person is acting or renouncing. Go beyond external to see the basic principle that causes bondage or that frees one from bondage. And what is that principle? That principle is whether one is attached or detached. So externally a person is acting, but he is detached, then he will not be bound. Karmanya akarmayeva pashyet. So he is externally acting, but he is not getting any reaction because he is not attached. He is detached. On the other hand, somebody is acting, is not acting externally. Akarmani chakarmayeva. He is not acting externally, but he is bound. He is going to get karmic reaction because he is attached. So basically, this verse is telling Arjuna that see beyond the externals. You are thinking that fighting in the war is going to cause bondage, and renouncing the war and going to the forest is going to cause freedom from bondage. But that is not the truth. Just don't see the externals. Go beyond externals to the internals, to see the motivation, to see the level of attachment or detachment. Is this clear? Okay. So, now let's go to the next verse. Yuktaha Krishna Karmakrit. A person can act in all possible ways and he will not be bound. So Prabhupada explains directly from the translator point of view over here. He says, the sense of eternal servitorship to Krishna makes one immune to all sorts of reactionary elements of work. So what is it makes us free? It is sense of eternal servitorship to Krishna. And because I am a servant of Krishna and I am doing this for Krishna's sake, therefore I don't become bound because I am simply following Krishna's instructions. Now, after describing this principle of how a person can be acting, but he is not bound. Karmanya akarma yaha pashyet. So this is the 18a. Now 18a is elaborated from 19 to 24. How a person who is doing action but doesn't get bound. Krishna is elaborating the internal consciousness of such a person in the next 5 verses, 19 to 24. In fact, it's 6 verses. 6:24, of course, is a famous and general verse. We'll come to that gradually. Yasya sarve samarambha.
Yasya sarve samarambha.
Kama sankalpa varjitaha.
Kama sankalpa varjitaha.
Jnana vidagdha karmanam.
Jnana vidagdha karmanam.
Tamaho panditam buddhaha.
Tamaho panditam buddhaha.
So, tam, that person, ahu, is said to be pandita. Such a person is said to be wise by the buddhaha. So, Krishna is using 2 words over here. Now, we will say Pandita is learned and Buddha is also learned, you can say. But Buddha here says those who are enlightened, those who are awakened. So the wise consider such a person to be learned. Now, this is the first time Krishna is using the word Pandita. He used a similar word, Pragyavadams Bhasasi. But Pragyavadams. So now, where does the word Pandita come most famously? Vidya Vinaya Sampanni. In 5.18 it will come in. Around 2 chapters later. So Krishna is saying, the wise consider such a person to be learned. So here, in that sense, Krishna is saying that I am Buddha, now I will consider you a Pandita when you understand this. When you understand this particular thing. What is that thing? Yes, sir, that person, sarve samarambha. His all arambha means beginning. So samarambha means samyak rupena arambha. That means one who begins in a systematic way, one who attempts. So one whose all attempts are kama sankalpa varjitaha. They are free from the desire for sense gratification. So now one may wonder, actually everything that we do is with the desire for sense gratification only in the material. So then what would be the motivation? At the highest level, that motivation is the pleasure of Krishna. At the karma yogi's level, the motivation is to develop one's knowledge so that one can become liberated from material existence. So that is not considered calm at this level. Calm here refers to gross sense gratification. Kama sankalpa varjitaha. So it is freed from the desire for sense gratification. And jnana agni. So such a person, now he is acting in knowledge. What is the knowledge? I am not the body, I am the soul. So that knowledge, jnana agni, dagda karmanam. Dagda means to be burned. So the knowledge will burn up the karma. Normally we talk about bhakti burning of the karma, isn't it? The famous verse in the Brahma Samhita is karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam. So by the practice of bhakti, the karma gets burnt. That is true. Now this jnana which Krishna is talking about will ultimately culminate in bhakti. So the jnana which actually frees one from karmic bondage is the jnana of how I am the servant of Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada talked about in the previous verse. At this level in the Bhagavad Gita, what it refers to is that if a person understands that I am not the body, I am the soul, and I am not acting for sense gratification, I am acting, okay, the body requires certain maintenance, I will do that, but I am not going to get entangled in it. Krishna talked about such a person in the third chapter, Tattva Vittu Mahabaho Gunakarma Bhaga, you talked about 3.28, just after Prakriti Kriya Mahasa. So if a person has that knowledge, then that knowledge prevents his consciousness from getting entangled. So, jnana dagna karmana. Even knowledge cannot entirely burn the karmic reactions, but it can save one from karmic bondage right now. There are two different issues over here. Bhakti will burn not only the present karma's consequences, but bhakti will burn even the past karma's consequences. But jnana, if a person in knowledge acts, the person may not become free from past karmic reactions. But action in knowledge can save one from bondage, at least in the present. So that is what Krishna is talking about here. Tamahu panditam buddhaha. Srila Prabhupada explains again this point of development of this knowledge of eternal servitorship to the Lord is compared to fire. Now, this is the first verse. First verse Krishna says what? One should be kama sankalpa vanchitaha. One should be free from the desire for sense gratification. Now in the next verse Krishna will talk about further the consciousness of a person. Tattva karma phala sangam,
tattva karma phala sangam,
nitya trupto nirashraya,
nitya trupto nirashraya,
karmanya vipravrittopi,
karmanya vipravrittopi,
naiva kinchit karoti saha,
naiva kinchit karoti saha.
So again, we'll go, these verses will go from down up, see what Krishna is saying. Naiva kinchit karoti saha. He is actually not doing anything. Kinchit means even a little. He is not doing even a little action. So there is no question of bondage for him. Karmanya vipravruttopi. Even if he is engaged in karma. Ubhen tyaktva karma phala sangam. Sangha is attachment. So when he has given up the attachment to the fruits of action, and then nitya trupto nirashrayaha. Nitya trupto is he satisfied with himself. Nirashrayaha. He is not taking shelter. Of what? We will see that this concept of shelter is talked about by Krishna in a different way from what we normally understand in bhakti. In bhakti we think of Bhagavan as the ashray. But before we can understand Bhagavan as the ashray, we generally understand that, we need to understand that when we do activity in material life, actually the karma phala is our ashray. That means, say sportsman, now he wins the Olympic gold medal, and then when he wins the all, somebody wins the World Cup, and then he holds up the cup and then asks him, how did you win this world? He says, since childhood I was dreaming that one day I will hold the World Cup aloft, and that image was driving me throughout my life, and through all the ups and downs of life, through all the defeats and heartbreaks, that imagination kept me going on and on and on. So now people think, oh, you are so determined. But actually what is he doing? He is taking ashray of the karma phala. One day I will get the karma phala, and then that is what will motivate me to go on. And Krishna critiques this mentality in 6.1. He says, when he says, anashrita karma phalam. Don't take ashray of the karma phala. Don't do the action with the desire for the result. Now of course, if we are desiring the result for Krishna, that is different. Now, you know, we had Prabhupada would say that when even when he was all alone in New York, he said, there are temples and there are devotees, only time is separating us from them. So, the way a bhakta acts is somewhat different from the way a karma yogi acts in terms of internal consciousness. A bhakta may even dream, but he dreams for Krishna, dreams for Krishna's pleasure. So for us, if we are motivated by a desire to please Krishna, and whatever you want to do, you want to offer it to Krishna ultimately, that is not considered wrong. But even when we are dreaming to offer something to Krishna, we should not give up our basic devotional activities for Krishna's sake. Because right now when we have a dream of offering something for Krishna, we really don't know how much of it is for Krishna's pleasure and how much of it is for our pleasure. Because when we offer something to Krishna, yes, it was for Krishna, but I offered it. Please remember that. Isn't it? I offered it. So we also want the credit for that. So just many times when people give a donation, they say, my name should come. You know, Hall of Fame. Something like that. So that we also want our name. Okay, yena kena prakarana man Krishna niveshe, that is fine. Somehow that fits the mind of Krishna. But so if something inspires us to render devotional service, that is fine. At the same time, we also need to understand that even when I want to offer something to Krishna, the most important thing that Krishna wants is my consciousness. So if I am not chanting properly, if I am not interacting properly with devotees, then even if I do a wonderful service and offer to Krishna, Krishna will not be very pleased by that. So yes, we can plan to offer the phala to Krishna, but Krishna is not concerned only with the phala. Krishna is also concerned with the karma. How are we doing it? Are we doing it in a way that is pleasing to Krishna? Then our actions will be pleasing and then our fruits will also be pleasing to Krishna. So, nitya trupto nirashraya. Here, ashraya, Krishna has not till now introduced the concept of himself as ashraya. So, that's why he's talking into nirashraya, don't have any material shelters. Don't take shelter of any material possessions or any other material people. Be satisfied and then act. Karmanya abhipravritto bi. Srila Prabhupada talks about how such a person is not even attached to his own possessions and he doesn't bother about even protecting his possessions. So now, nirashirayata chittatma,
nirashirayata chittatma,
tyakta sarva parigraha,
tyakta sarva parigraha,
shariram kevalam karma,
shariram kevalam karma,
gurvannapnoti kilvisham,
gurvannapnoti kilvisham.
So again, kurvan na apnoti, he will act na apnoti, he will not get kilvisha, any contamination. Who will not get? Nirashir, one who doesn't have any desire, yada chitta atma, one who is controlled. So here atma doesn't always refer to the soul. It's controlled his mind and senses. Yada chitta atma, is self-controlled. It can be self-controlled, it can be sense-controlled here. Prabhupada says, chitta atma is mind and intelligence. Tetta sarvaparigraha, who gives up all sense of possessiveness. Shariram kevalam karma. He acts only for the sake of the bodily maintenance. So, here, what exactly is Krishna talking about? Is now, if Arjuna is going to win the war and become the king, he is going to have magnificent palaces and maid servants and male servants serving him, and he is going to eat opulent food. So, is that shariram kevalam karma? Yesterday we had such a big feast. So many items we are eating, paneer and so many other items we are eating. Is that shariram kevalam karma? Actually, here Krishna is not talking about an enunciate. What will be shariram kevalam karma will vary according to person to person. For a kshatriya, he is not acting just to maintain his body. Kshatriya has a position which is also meant for his service to society. And that position is there not just for his sense gratification. That position also brings him the respectability in public eyes by which he can execute his service to Krishna properly. So, shariram kevalam karma will vary according to person to person. That's like in Ishopanishad, we have the concept of kota. Tena tektena gunjita. So, what will be one's kota will be different from person to person. So, if we talk about grihasthas, we may think, oh, grihasthas don't have to work very hard. They can have a small, simple house and they can have a simple job. That is fine in principle. But, according to a person's teacher, according to a person's culture, a person is expected to have a certain level in society. Now, if we want to attract elite class of people, then if we are going to have a congregation program, now if the kind of people who are having that program, whom we want to attract, they are all having their own row houses. They will never come to a flat to attend a program. They will consider it below their dignity. So then they need somebody in their socio-economic bracket to relate with. So if somebody in their socio-economic bracket, they will be attracted. So then for a person who by his past culture and past circumstances has a particular stature, Bhakti does not necessarily mean that he has to give up that stage. He has to bring Krishna within his whole sphere of activities and then connect everyone to Krishna. So George Harrison was told by Srila Prabhupada that you keep singing, but you sing about Krishna. So now, for some people, they may be inspired to renounce the whole world and just focus on Krishna consciousness. Generally speaking, once we are in the renounced order, then we don't have so many possessions and so much question of stature and everything. We all have the same dress, same color dress more or less, either white or saffron. We have the same hairstyle, which is no hair. So, we don't have so much external differences. But in general, if somebody is in the world, then shariram kevalam karma, tena tektena bhunji bhav. That will vary according to person to person. And that has to be decided both two sides, one by individual sincerity and second is by senior guidance. What will be my quota? I have to myself be sincere about what is it that I am actually looking for in life. And then one can devote oneself in Krishna's service. Kurvan na apnoti kilvisham na apnoti. So Prabhupada used a little drastic example over here. He used two examples in these purports. First he used the example of a machine part. So he says, a machine that is well oiled, every part will function in coordination with the whole. And when a person acts in that way, then the whole system can work properly. So now this may seem to say that does this person have no sense of consciousness or individuality? And to compare a human being to a machine, it seems to be quite a depersonalizing, mechanizing example. But the point over here is, Krishna has already talked about how we are not the body and soul and we have consciousness. But here he is talking about harmonizing with the whole. So the emphasis of the example is not the absence of consciousness. The emphasis is the harmony of action. So just as the machine part coordinates with the whole, like that the soul coordinates with Krishna. And that's why the person is perfectly harmonious. And so Prabhupada gives a second example in the purport, that is of an animal. And he says that an animal, when he is in the protection of a master, the master may sometimes feed him, master may sometimes beat him. And the master may sometimes send the animal to slaughterhouses. But the animal accepts everything. Now this may seem to be again even more revolting to our sensibilities. That is Krishna like that? Somebody will feed, somebody will starve, somebody will send somebody to slaughterhouses. No, here Prabhupada establishes the principle of surrender. Krishna is not that kind of master. But he's saying, just as the animal, whatever when the master does, the animal accepts that. So Prabhupada, you know, he did not like the Western infatuation with dogs, which was there, where the dogs were elevated to a level that of equality with human beings. Dogs were, many times people sleep with their dogs. It's quite shocking. They sleep with their dogs and they sit and chat with their dogs, and dogs travel about in their cars. So often if you see these West people traveling, now they seem to be like the chauffeurs for their car for their dog who is sitting in the main seat. So Prabhupada did not appreciate that. Krishna's Prabhupada appreciated in dogs the tendency of faithfulness. So similarly here Krishna is talking about surrender. And we have the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's famous song also. Tomara Kuku. I am your servant. And the servant example that is, yeah, I am like your dog. There's a whole song actually on that. You know, I will sit outside and I will bark at anyone who comes inside, and whenever you call me, then I will come wagging my tail. What is the service that my Lord has got for me? So there, the important principle is of the surrender. So the example of machine part conveys the idea of harmony, and the example of the animal conveys the idea of faithfulness or surrender. So Prabhupada uses examples to explain how such a person acts, and then further. Now, different. I am not going into technicalities. Some different acharyas said that this verse refers to sadhaka stage, this verse refers to that stage. It all becomes too technical. I am focusing here on how things apply practically to us over here. Yatruccha labha santushto
Yatruccha labha santushto
Vandvatito vimatsarha
Vandvatito vimatsarha
Samasiddhava siddhaucha
Samasiddhava siddhaucha
Ritvapina nibadhyate
Ritvapina nibadhyate.
So this series of verses is similar to Tasya Pragyapatishtata series in the second chapter. There also Krishna gives various description. He says Tasya Pragyapatishtata Siddhir Muir Ucchate. Such a person has fixed intelligence. steady intelligence, undisturbed intelligence. So here, all these verses have a common denominator, that is, such a person does not get bound. The exact phrases may be different, but the common denominator of all these descriptions is, such a person does not get bound. Krutvapi nanipatyate. He doesn't get bound. So, how he doesn't get bound? Yadrucha lavasantushto. Whatever comes by its own accord, he accepts that. And dvandvatito vimatsaraha. Dvandva atito. The duality of this world, he is beyond that. He is free from envy. Actually, it is the envy that creates a sense of duality. Oh, this person gets more honor than me. You know, when I give class, not so many people attend, but he gives class, so many people attend. It's all stupidity. You know, we are giving class to please Krishna. And who is attending, that doesn't matter so much. But when there is that sense of enviousness, then vimatsaraha. And it can go to so much levels. If a counselor is there, how many counselors do I have? How many counselors that counselor has? It can even go to the guru level. How many disciples do I have? How many disciples does somebody else have? So, when there is vimatsaraha, then there is dvandva. Now, dvandvadito vimatsara samasiddhavasiddhavcha. That, in success and failures, the person is equipoised. Kutvapi nanibadhyate. Now, how can somebody be equipoised? The person can be equipoised when he understands that actually I am doing this for Krishna's pleasure. So what was Prabhupada's consciousness? Prabhupada, when he got so many disciples, but he was thinking that actually I am connected with Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur, my Guru Maharaj. And my Guru Maharaj is sending all these souls to serve me. There is a very beautiful incident, 1968 I think, Ramdas described it. Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur's appearance day was there. And that day, when Prabhupada gave a talk, and after the talk, what did he do? He read out the names of all his disciples to Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur. And then he said, all these are my offering to you. So, all these are my offering to you. So, the idea is that when a spiritual master is serving, the spiritual master doesn't think that all these are my servants. He thinks, yes, actually, these are all my offerings to my spiritual master. So, in one instance, Ramana was saying that, when you are getting initiated, actually all of you are becoming bhoga to be offered to Krishna. And after an object is offered to Krishna, it becomes prasad. So after initiation, all of you should become prasad. What does that mean? All of you should become carriers of Krishna's mercy. Not only do we dedicate ourselves, but we actually become carriers of Krishna's mercy. That's the devotional understanding over here. So, when a person has this understanding that actually I am doing everything for the sake of offering to Krishna, then such a person doesn't get bound. Kutva api nanipatyate. So now Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that all this does not mean that a person is not proactive in doing work. Now Prabhupada is very active in initiating new projects, and Hare Guru writes in Hare Krishna Explosion that one day they wrote to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, they had a small patch of land in West Virginia, New Vrindavan. And he said, that now we have got a bigger land. So Prabhupada wrote back, very good. He said, now you have got a bigger land. In the future, you can purchase a bigger land. And in the future, you can purchase all of West Virginia itself. And then you can make all of America Krishna conscious. So he said, he writes that Prabhupada would just sit on a humble... Prabhupada would not even have a desk. Prabhupada sit on the floor. And he did not also have a wooden desk. He would have some, normally speaking, in the early days at least, Prabhupada would use his trunk itself as a desk. And he would have sit on the floor, have his own trunk as a desk. And from that, he would casually hand out plans to change the world. So we just needed people who were ready to take up the plan. So a devotee can be very dynamic, not just ambitious, but super ambitious. But that is for the sake of pleasing Krishna. And for that purpose, the devotee may be ready to do anything and everything. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in one sense, he was very particular about food. Actually, the devotees had to cook for him, and there was specialized cooking for him. And there was a cook who would travel, and the cook would be trained. Now, was that for the sake of his body? His body, at one level, his body was a vehicle for serving Krishna. So, in that sense, it is also transcendental. But if we look at Srila Prabhupada's life earlier, when he was in New Delhi and when he was in dire economic straits, Prabhupada had a choice. He had a little money, either he could use that money to print back to Gaudiya or print his books, or even with their money to purchase his breakfast. And Prabhupada would use it to print back to Gaudiya. And then he would go to the printer would ask him, Swamiji, did you have any breakfast? Prabhupada would not say anything. He would not say anything, then he would say, not got breakfast. Then he would order for him, he would get for him. And then he knew that he was Vaishnava, so he would get food accordingly, and Prabhupada would take that. So, when it was necessary for Krishna's service, Prabhupada was able to sacrifice even his bodily needs. But then, when his bodily needs could become a way for him to train devotees, Prabhupada trained devotees in the culture of cooking. So for the devotees, the greatest motivation for learning cooking was that we can offer this to Prabhupada. So that's how Prabhupada used even his bodily needs to engage devotees in service. And cooking is a very important part of the culture of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada taught that. But Prabhupada was not attached. And we see practically last several months of his mortal stay in the mortal world, Prabhupada was not eating anything. Prabhupada was just taking charanamrit and saying Harikatha and Harikim. That will be our medicine. So Prabhupada was living without that for a long time. In the final days, Bhaktisarvada Maharaj came to meet him and Prabhupada was so totally emaciated. So, but nothing was there. And the whole body was just a set of bones. And he was shocked to see that. And Prabhupada saw that he was shocked. So Prabhupada just said at that time, you see, you are a scientist, you need proof. So throughout my life I have taught I am not the body, I am the soul. Now you look at me, my body is gone, still I am here. So I am proving to you what I have taught. So Prabhupada's consciousness was unaffected. So a devotee may accept also material opulence, but that is for the sake of serving Krishna. For the sake of serving Krishna. So the Prabhupada was not concerned with good food just for the food's sake. Just for the food's sake. He was concerned that yes, it has to be offered to Krishna, so it has to be cooked properly. As you cook properly, then fine. Then train devotees how to cook properly. So that way, there is a transcendental understanding even when we see devotees having relative material opulence. And then Krishna is basically analyzing the same point of not being bound in different ways. Vatasangasya muktasya jnanavastita chetasa
jnanavastita chetasa
yajnayacharatha karma
yajnayacharatha
karma samagram praviliyate
samagram praviliyate.
So praviliyate means to merge. Samagram means completely. So there is complete merging. Now this may give Mayavadi ecstasy. Although actually there is no ecstasy in that philosophy. There is only shanti. But if you see what Krishna is telling us, samagram praviliyate is karma samagram praviliyate. Actually the karma merges into transcendence. When does the karma merge into transcendence? Yajnaya acharataha karma. When one acts for the sake of yajna. So this is a continuation of the theme which was talked about in 3.9 to 16. The principle of performing yajna. Yajna arthat karma unit lokoyam karma bandhana. So Krishna will elaborate that over here in the next set of verses. So gata sangasya muktasya, one is free from sangha, attachment, and one is jnana avastajita, one is situated in knowledge. Such a person, when he acts for the sake of yajna, for the sake of sacrifice, then samagram praviliyate, the person's actions are free from bondage. The person's actions merge into transcendence. That means the actions are no longer material and so they bring no material reactions. And that's why even when we do our various services, now we can perceive the bondage at various levels. Sometimes when we are doing our services, we may get attached to the results of the services. Now I have done this, my name should come, I should get the credit for this. And even if that doesn't happen, we get sometimes attached to the people with whom we are working. We may get attached to the environment, we get attached to the position. Now all this, because it is in the realm of devotional service, it is certainly not as harmful as it is if you are doing it outside in the material world. But at the same time, along with the venue of service, the form of service, ultimately what is most important is the object of service. You know, the arena of service is fine. The arena of service for Srila Prabhupada, that was initially in Vrindavan. And then it was in New York, which are two radically different arenas. They're as contradictory as possible. Close. So, they're as different as possible. But Prabhupada was attached to the arena of service. Prabhupada was attached to the open, it's becoming double, it's open compound. So the arena of sense, Prabhupada is not attached to the arena, and Prabhupada is not attached to the form also, in the sense that Prabhupada could have been peaceful just translating Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, or Prabhupada supervised construction, Prabhupada supervised management, Prabhupada had to care for devotees who had difficulty in following the principles, Prabhupada had to sort out managerial roles. So in one sense the form was often troublesome, the arena was unpleasant, but what was Prabhupada concerned is the object. All this is for Krishna's sake. Because of that, so when we are doing service, what are the various factors? There is the form of the service, what is the kind of service I am doing, there is the arena of service, where is the service that I am doing, there is the associate, the environment for the service, with whom I am doing the service. But more important than all of these is the object of service, for whom am I doing this service. Let's look at this once again. This is a important practical point for us. So, if you see in the 11th canto of Uddhava Gita, Krishna describes various factors that determine which moods are going to influence us. He gives a long list of factors, and then he says, by changing these factors, one can change the influence of the moods on us. So we will not look at all of them, but we look at broad principles. So when we are doing service, there can be the arena of service, there can be the form of service, there can be the association of service, and there then can be ultimately the purpose or the object of service. So all these are important for us, and if all of them are conducive, that is wonderful. The arena means, you may say that, yeah, I like to do service where there is devotees all around, there is a devotional environment all around. So for Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada changed the arena from Vrindavan, he went to New York. So actually if you see, his arena changed to something which was quite unfavorable. It was quite anti-devotional. And the form of the service, if we see, initially Srila Prabhupada was doing commentation, translation and commentary. But then Srila Prabhupada often had to do conflict resolution among disciples. Conflict resolution is not at all a pleasant thing to do, because both people feel that they are right, and he had to do. Prabhupada said, so much of my time is going away in just dealing with managerial problems, and managerial problems are generally people problems. And if you look at association, now Prabhupada had association of Prajavasis, and he left that association for the sake of hippies. So Prabhupada in one sense changed all the externals in a way that might seem quite negative, but what remained consistent was for Srila Prabhupada was the object of service, and the object of service was always Krishna. So if the object is fixed, then the arena, the form, the association may be unfavorable. So Radhanath Maharaj says that when he was living in New Vrindavan, the kind of people he was living with, he said, if I had my own free choice, I would never have lived with that kind of people. But because that was the way I was to serve Srila Prabhupada, so I started to live with those people. As I lived with those people, gradually, I developed some very deep friendships with them also. So ultimately, everything is important. The arena is important, the form is important, the association is important. But most important is the object. And when we stay fixed on that, then the changes that happen in our services, they don't disturb us. Sometimes we may be one department, afterwards we may change to another department. So initially when devotees were here and the Vada project had to start off, and nobody was ready to go to Vada, because that was Chapati is a beehive of spiritual activity, and that time Vada seemed to be like a 4 second place. And Radhama himself had to take a class at that time. He called all the Brahmacharya also there for the class few years ago. Inspired everyone. And then devotees went, and now that is becoming a vibrant spiritual center. So the arena where we are doing service may change, but over a period of time, what will happen is, if the object remains fixed, then Krishna consciousness will manifest in multiple places. And that's how things grow. So So now, after talking about the samagram praviliyate, everything remains transcendental if the object is yajnaya acharatha. Object is the pleasure of Krishna. So now Krishna will talk the verse that is the Mahaprasade Govinde verse of the Mayavadis. This is the verse that they recite before taking food. Brahmarpanam Brahmahaveer,
Brahmarpanam Brahmahaveer,
Brahmagnau Brahmanahutam,
Brahmagnau Brahmanahutam,
Brahmaivatena Gantavyam,
Brahmaivatena Gantavyam,
Brahmakarma Samadhina,
Brahmakarma Samadhina.
So Brahma, 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 they love this word. They don't love Krishna and they love Brahma. So Krishna gives them a treat over here. Brahma comes how many times? 6 times in this word. So Brahmarpanam Brahmavir Brahmagno Brahmanah. So now what is happening over here in this verse? Actually, Krishna is giving us a transcendental vision of the process of yajna. So in the previous verse, Krishna said, Yajnaya acharatah karma. Act for the sake of yajna. You remember earlier I talked about how words can have narrow meanings and they can have also broad meanings. So, did we discuss about the various meanings of the word yajna also at that time? Yajna, at a narrow level, can lead to fire sacrifice. So Krishna is going to broaden Arjuna's understanding of the meaning of the word yajna. I think I have the slide now. I think I have taken it. So let us see. So anyway, I don't need to repeat that. Yajna at a narrow level means fire sacrifice. So that is the understanding which Arjuna is having. And now Krishna has said in the previous yajnaya acharatah karma. Act for yajna. Now Krishna is thinking, Arjuna is thinking, if I am fighting on the battlefield, how will I be performing yajna? Actually, I will not be performing yajna. So then Krishna is telling that actually, if your consciousness is transcendental, then everything material becomes spiritualized. Because ultimately, everything material is connected to the Supreme Spirit. And in that sense, the Mayavadis consider everything to be just spirit. The Vaishnavas understand that everything is energy of spirit. So in that sense, everything is potential Brahma. So, Brahma, let's look at this verse meaning first and we'll go on. So, in a yajna, what all are the components, ingredients of yajna? There is the fire, which is lit. The fire requires some wood, which is actually, through the fire is lit. Then it requires ghee or some other samagri which is offered in sacrifice. Then there is the priest who is chanting. Then there is the mantra that is chanted. And then there is the fruit that is released. Sometimes there is the yajman. So there are various factors over here. So Krishna is talking here in terms of which are non-specific. Brahma, Brahma, Brahma. But Krishna will take the same verse and describe it in a different way in the 9th chapter. I think it's 9.18. Aham kratur aham yajna swada aham aham aushidham mantro aham aham evajyam aham agnir aham hutam. So what Krishna is talking about as Brahma over here, there Krishna will describe as aham. So the Bhagavad Gita is progressing in its understanding. So Krishna has not talked about directly about himself till now too much, although he talked about himself in the start of the 4th chapter. The focus is not himself right now. The focus is how the Karma Yogi stays free from bondage. And for that purpose, he's keeping the focus. Yes, if you are fixed in transcendence, then you will no longer be bound. So, arpanam. Arpanam means that which is offered. Brahma arpanam. The contribution what you are offering will become spiritual. Brahma havir. So, the ahuti, the ghee, the butter that is offered. So, actually, in the Western terminology, the word ghee is unknown. You know, ghee is a central ingredient in the Vedic culture. The concept of ghee itself is not in non-Western cuisine and Western culture. That's why many times Prabhupada will translate ghee as clarified butter. Now when we hear the word clarified butter, we need a clarification of what it means. What is this clarified butter? But actually, the concept of ghee is not there in Western tradition at all, practically speaking. They have the idea of butter, and that's why. And that concept of butter became popular, so we have Amul butter and things like that. Is that butter was of course there in Vedic culture also. But the concept of ghee is not so common, especially in the Western tradition.
So sometimes Prabhupada use translates havi as butter. Normally it is ghee. We translate as butter, clarified butter, sometimes translate as ghee also. And then Brahma, now the fire. Now, Prabhupada is very significantly using the word here, not consumption, but consummation. What is the difference between consumption and consummation? Consumption means that it is consumed and it is ended. It's like if there is some food, I consume it and then it gets over. But consummation means to attain perfection. Consummate means perfect. So, it was a consummate performance that by particular person. That means perfect performance. And the consummation of a particular activity means that activity is taken to its zenith, to its highest level of perfection. So, actually speaking, when the ahuti is offered in the fire, it is not just consumed, it is consummated. It is not just destroyed and turned into ashes. Actually, it attains its ultimate purpose. Brahmaiva tena gantavyam. So, if such a person has this consciousness that ultimately I am Brahman, the samagri that I am offering, that is Brahman. The mantra that I am chanting, they are also Brahman. They are also spiritual. They are also the energies of Krishna. If I have this consciousness, Brahmaiva tena gantavyam. Such a person will attain Brahma. Brahma karma samadhina. Brahma karma samadhina. That actually, that is such a person is performing Brahma karma only. He is not doing any mundane activity. He is doing spiritual activity. Samadhina. He will attain samadhi. The word samadhi has come for the second time in the Bhagavad Gita. Not explicitly, third time rather. First it came where samadhau na vidhiyate bhogeshwar prasattam 2.44. Then it came in 2.53 when he said that, what was that verse? That Samadhi. So now Krishna is talking about samadhi once again. And he says, Brahma karma samadhi. So what does this verse mean in practical terms? It means, so Prabhupada, when they were in Vishakhapatnam, at that time, the devotees saw the ocean there was very beautiful. So they said, let us go and bathe and swim in the ocean. So they started swimming and bathing. And then, as they were bathing and swimming, the devotees were thinking, oh, is this real Krishna consciousness and what are we doing over here? And then Prabhupada came there and Prabhupada also took a bath over there. And then Prabhupada said, see, Prabhupada quoted the verse 7.8, Rasoham Sukamteya Prabhashvishi Surya Pranava Sarvavedeshu Shabdakya Paurujanishu. Prabhupada said, just see, you know, the taste of water is Krishna. The sun overhead, that is Krishna. The speech that we are making, that is Krishna. The ability that we have for swimming, that is Krishna. All around us is Krishna. How can we forget Krishna? But you are thinking, we are not even thinking of Krishna in the situation. So, all the Prabhupada is doing the same activity as everybody else was doing. But the consciousness was entirely different. So, Brahma Karma Samadhina. So, actually, if one is internally connected with Krishna, then one can see the Krishna connection everywhere. Now, Hiranyakashipu wanted to burn Prahlad by throwing him into fire. But Prahlad thought, oh, my father is so kind, he's putting me into the mouth of my Lord. Fire is the mouth of Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu tried to get the demons, tried to get thrown into a snake pit. And he says, oh, I am surrounded by the representatives of the couch of my Lord. And the Sheshanag is there, so all the Nagas are there. So wherever he was put in, he was thrown into the ocean, and Prahlad thought, oh, actually, this ocean is the place where my Lord Vishnu resides ultimately. So wherever he was put, he was completely Krishna conscious. Not at all disturbed by anything. So Brahma Karma Samadhi. Now, so now from a philosophical perspective, this word is significant that in the middle of the purport process, everything that exists is situated in the Brahma Jyoti. So we shouldn't think Brahma Jyoti is only in the spiritual sky. Actually, Brahma Jyoti is all pervading, and one corner of the spiritual sky, the material universe, or rather a whole of material existence, which consists of many universes, appears by the glance and the subsequent process that takes place in creation. But ultimately, everything is situated in Brahma Jyoti. And when that Jyoti is covered by illusion or sense gratification, it is called material. So, when does something become material? When it is covered by sense gratification. So let's look here at. Okay, so let's avoid this now. So, material and spiritual means, now Prabhupada gives the example, I am speaking through this mic. This mic is used for Krishna's service, therefore it is spiritual. So, I mentioned this in the Ishopishad also, that material and spiritual, these words can be used in two senses. One is the compositional sense and the other is the applicational sense. So, from the compositional sense point of view, what is it composed of? And applicational sense is, what is it used for? So, what defines something as material or spiritual? First, from a philosophical point of view, we have to understand that actually, I am not the body. The body is material, I am spiritual. This is ABC of philosophy. And without understanding this, we cannot even begin our spiritual life. Beyond this, when we come to an advanced level of consciousness, we start seeing that actually, yes, there may be this difference of material and spiritual in terms of composition, but even that which is material can be used in Krishna's service. That can also be used in Krishna's service, and therefore, if it is used in Krishna's service, it should be seen as spiritual, not as material. So, that is from the applicational perspective. So, from the applicational perspective, means Srila Prabhupada wanted to have opulent services for Krishna, but at the same time, Prabhupada said the best way to live is to live in the natural environment. Have your own land, have your own cow. So Prabhupada is not infatuated by material things. He did not say that material things are what is necessary for serving Krishna. So we can use everything material in Krishna's service, but we have to have a philosophical difference clear. So is this material or spiritual? From the composition point of view, it is material. From the application point of view, it is spiritual. So now Srila Prabhupada is talking about matter covered by illusion. Now, illusion is not a particular entity that will come and cover matter, isn't it? There is no particular entity called illusion. Illusion is within our consciousness. Sometimes when we say illusion is covered by illusion, it's not like illusion is a physical blanket that covers something. The illusion is the covering on our conception, on our consciousness, that perverts our conceptions. So, what is material or spiritual? Prabhupada is talking from the application point of view over here. He says that everything can be used in Krishna's service. When the illusion is removed, then matter, this material being, can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness. Thus, the offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, the process of consumption, the contributor and the result, are all combined together, Brahman or the Absolute Truth. That means, for example, say, we decide to build a big temple for Krishna. Then, at that time, in building a temple, what are the ingredients? The consuming agent, the offering for the sake of Krishna, we are building a temple, that is transcendental, consuming agent, people who are working hard for that purpose, process of consumption, the going out and doing fundraising for that purpose, the contributor, the person who is doing that, the result, ultimate temple is built, all this becomes transcendental. And all the transcendence of all that will ultimately depend on the transcendence of our consciousness. To the extent we are transcendental in consciousness, to that extent we will have transcendental consciousness, transcendental vision of everything. To conclude this point, our Acharya Chakravarti Pad is not in this purport, but later on he explains that this Krishna is actually telling Arjuna to re-envision the whole battlefield as a yajna. In fact, in the Mahabharata, there Krishna tells this. See this whole battlefield as a yajna sthali. Now Arjuna, and your Gandiva is the spoon. And the Kauravas are the Ahuti. See? So this is a very beautiful analogy. It comes in the Mahabharata. And it's quite a graphic analogy. And this analogy is, in one sense, confirmed by Krishna in the 11th chapter. So re-envision. Re-envision means see in a new way. Battlefield as yajna. So battlefield is the Yajnasthali. I think you have a place in the ashram called Yajnasthali. So where? You know, Srila Prabhupada was also asked about this. One devotee asked Prabhupada, when we take prasad,
you know, there are germs in our body. So what happens to those germs when they come in contact with Krishna Prasad? So Prabhupada said, yes, they get benefited. When you take Prasad, you are doing social service.
You are doing social service. You are benefiting all the germs in the body also. But of course, that is not the only way that we can do social service. There are other ways also. So battlefield is the Yagyasthali. Then, the ladle is the spoon. Spoon is Arjuna's Gandiva bow. And the Ahuti, the offering is the Kauravas. And who is the person accepting the offering? Accepting the offering. That is revealed later by Bhagavatam, the Vishwarupa. Isn't it? Later on, what happens in the 11th chapter? What does Krishna show Arjuna? That Vaktrani, your mouth is so fierce. Vishanti, they are all entering into your mouth. So, there in the 11th chapter, Krishna demonstrates to Arjuna what he has told over here. This you read like a Yagyasthali, and all these Kauravas are the offering for me. So, now I'll show you how I am accepting this offering. Bhishmamja, Dronamja, Jayadratamja, all of them are entering into it. Now, what does this indicate? This indicates that not that God is a cannibal who eats other human beings, that it would be a very, very gross idea. You know, when the court case was going on in Russia, at that time the ROC, the Russian Orthodox Church, they took these verses and they said, these Hindus, they worship a cannibal God. They worship a cannibal God. Now, this is such a gross perversion where one doesn't even understand the basic philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. What is being talked about over here is that ultimately everybody has going to die. And there is no Vishwarup specifically. Vishwarup is not, there is no Vishwarup loka in the spiritual world where Krishna is eating that ahuti. Nothing like that. There is a particular demonstration over here. The demonstration is that our work in this world is also a sacrifice. And for different people, what is offered in sacrifice will be different. So here Krishna is telling Arjuna that even if somebody is consumed by Krishna, even if there is something like that is literally happening, still that person gets purified and liberated. This is all the demons get liberated. Not to speak of higher souls. But the important principle is, you are giving away Vishnu, that this is Yajna, and whatever you are offering to Arjuna, that will be a part of Yajna. So, please do Yajna. Yajnaya acharata karma. So, when Krishna says, oh, actually everything is Brahma and everything will attain perfection by doing various activities, Arjuna gets a question. I never heard of this kind of yajna. You know, battlefield being a yajna and a ahuti being offered through arrows. So then from the next verse onwards, Krishna will tell, oh, there are many different kinds of yajnas. So from 25 to 33, next section we will discuss, is different kinds of yajnas and how they ultimately lead to knowledge. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki
jai.
Srimad Prabhupada ki
jai.
Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Thank you very much.